Well, good. Can I operate from here? Is that okay? This is better than using a machine and rubbish. I thought that might save me talking. Has the book got very far? Oh. Okay, I'll have to say something. I've got masses of stuff here. Here we go. That's right. Yeah, I understand I'm supposed to pass on some of this intense investment wisdom that was imparted into me at this Hong Kong seminar. It was called the World Money Analyst Investment Seminar 1982. And it was held in Hong Kong. There were about 600 investors from around the world. They were all sort of multi-millionaires, and they were all there to listen to 44 of the top investment speakers in the world. And the competition was to work out which was the most attractive country for all these guys to be investing their money in. And I thought, well, a good way to get to know them would be sort of have a little store. There's about 20 little stores. The Swiss banks have a little store each, and all these guys, some Californian land development people, and quite a range of little stores. So we had this little thing, and I ran a thing at the Rotary the other night showing the slide presentation, sort of audio-visual thing that I borrowed from the Department of Industrial Development, which is a little 18-minute thing, and we ran this continuously for the week, whether I was at the stall or not, and it did create a bit of interest. It was interesting for me because people came forward and sort of realised that I was somehow plugged into Western Australia, and they raised all sorts of objections about investing here. And whereas I was telling them what a wonderful country it was, they were saying, of course, they've been looking at it for 4 or 5 years and finding there's a few shortcomings. And some of the shortcomings that they were still had mental hang-ups about, I was able to explain to them that they've been sort of crossed off the list a few years ago, and they're no longer a restriction, there's not a problem. But then I had to explain to them, but we've got two new ones for every one that we've crossed off the list. You know, you had to be fair, but it was very interesting, really. And I was thinking the makeup of the attendees were that about 60% of them were from the USA, and 20% from Europe and UK, and the rest of them were sort of all half-breeders like Australians and things like that from other parts of the world. There were a few, a lot of Orientals there, from a lot of Japanese. So that was the main tenor of it. Now, The show ran for a week. It started at 7:30 every morning and finished at 11 p.m. every night. There were always about three or four sessions going simultaneously in different parts of the hotel. So I was running around with my tape recorder picking out which sessions from the program. I could only really attend two at a time because I could have my tape recorder at one and I could attend the other one. Every 45 minutes I'd dash off to change a tape and come back to the one I was at. And since that was in early March, since then I've been trying to put it all together and make sense of it all. And I really intend to do this, put it all together, and then I'll know which of the various conflicting sets of advice I got there that I'm going to follow and make use of. So when I started putting this all together last night, I thought, well, it needs a bit more work, really. You know, especially for me, I'm a bit of a slow learner. So what I'm going to do is put it all together and then we'll have a week-long seminar. So because there are advantages in distilling all this wisdom that's in this magnificent volume and on all the tapes and things I brought back, because out of it all is a total investment strategy that will enable us to construct a portfolio, like, you know, 20% of your investments in something and 15% in something else and 5% in something else. And the portfolio that you can come up with is a total package in that it will protect you under any situation, whether the economy goes this way or that way, gold goes up, down, the markets go this way or other way. And it's not just simply a matter of buying 10 of this and 10 of something else that will go in the opposite direction that you come out breaking even, but it's all a matter of using leverage on currencies, currency futures or gold futures or market options and things like that, forward advance treasury bills and things like that from various currencies to balance things out. So whichever actually happens, you will come out in front. Now that's where it needs a little bit more work before I can say that it's all over. But my summary last night came out as the fact that I can't even start on this thing without answering six major questions that sort of really come to mind. And if I can just run through the six here, one of them is, the question is, are our politicians allowing themselves to steer us toward a major inflation or a major deflation? Now, we can work that out later, but that's vital, whether the currency is going to be reflated or deflated, and whether we'll follow the USA, and so that's really almost a topic in itself, because we've talked about this theoretically for several years, you know, in the world context, but I think in the next few weeks the answer is going to emerge, and that's going to be a vital answer, because I think we've only got 3 or 4 years ahead of us in this new cycle we're entering, and whether it's an inflationary or hyperinflationary or a deflationary one is vital at the beginning. Then you sort of know where you're going. Question two was, will the Australian governments, that's federal and state, ever come to grips with and actually do anything about controlling their insane rate of spending? You know, we know they haven't already, whether they've talked about it, but they haven't done it. But that's absolutely vital, and I'll explain why in the world context, why the Australian rate of spending is important. Number three is, will the Australian people as a whole manage to permanently cripple our country's chances of competing internationally? We'll talk about that one later. Number four, will the Australian government, through its crippling tax policies, manage to cripple the small percentage of productive people who aren't preoccupied with crippling Australia? These are all questions. We've got to know the answers to these questions before we look at it from the overall point of view. Number five, will Australia discover in time that we're geographically and economically part of Asia and cease being the laughingstock of Asia by sort of acting and pretending like we're a little bit of Europe chopped off, floating around, not quite knowing where we belong? And the sixth one is, of course, what will happen to the price of gold and the international stock markets? So there really is enough material in all that to run maybe a weekend seminar, but I'll just touch on some of these points and why some of them are international, some of them purely on the Australian scene. Why that's important is that if we're going to compete internationally, we've got to be just a little bit better than the other guys that we're competing with. And I don't mean a lot better. You know, everything's very marginal these days. If we're a little bit better, we'll get the lot. If we're a little bit worse, we won't get any. You know, so it's very marginal, and it's always changing. The things we've got to compete on, of course, are interest rates, inflation rates, and stability, political and industrially. They're the sort of main measures. So can I keep going like this? Is that okay? Well, we'll touch on point. There are a lot of other speakers, so what I'll do is just touch quickly on these six points on the way through. Okay. Inflation versus deflation. And there's a couple of things that popped out at the seminar that make me realise that we really maybe don't have the problems built into our system here that other countries have, but some of the other countries can get out of their problems quicker than we can, because we've gone sort of further down this government control road than some of the other countries, like mainly the USA. In California, there's a real estate agent guy telling me that they've got some problems with defaults over there, and you know, some mortgage defaults and things like that. And I said, well, okay, we've got the same problem in Australia. What's your problem? He said, well, it's mainly because the value of properties have quadrupled in the last 4 years, and each time a property has increased in value, the owner has gone off and added another mortgage on the top. Consequently, they got houses with 7, 8, and 9 mortgages on them. And this was good. Every time they popped another mortgage on the end, they raised themselves another $20,000 or $30,000, which they ran out, bought another Cadillac or a yacht or something like that. And the thing was tenuously supported up here in mid-air by these high property values. And what's happened in the last 12 months is property values have halved. And these guys are looking at their houses now and saying, hey, we can buy a better house than ours for cash down the road. Let's not worry about making any more payments, because there's about 7 or 8 mortgages. I mean, I think it'll be years before the lawyers sort of sort this lot out and come and get us. And we don't want to really want that Cadillac anymore, so we'll walk away from that too. And a lot of people are just walking away from things and leaving a hell of a wrangle. And this is sort of flowing right through the finance system. Chris, how many mortgages do you normally have on properties in Australia? I've heard of second mortgages, but I haven't really heard of many more. Yeah, well, that's, I wasn't naive, but yeah, okay. Here's another comment here, that General Motors is a pretty big company over there, and they're the only car manufacturer that seem to be doing any good compared with the other ones. But this comment in this newsletter here says that General Motors has lost more than 95% of its working capital over the last 3 years. That's 95% of it. It's lost. It's declined. Its working capital has declined from $7.5 billion down to $0.2 billion. And what they're doing is paying the same dividend they've been paying for years, but they're borrowing money to pay the dividend because they've just about paid out all the capital. So you've got a few problems there. And here's another invitation to a funeral I got from a fellow called Dr. Franz Pick. He says, 95% of the once powerful United States dollar has passed away since 1940, having suffered from cancer of inflation for over 40 years. He goes on to explain how the disease had spread so rapidly in recent years. And funeral services await the demise of the remaining 5%, which at the present rate of decay should not be long in coming. The bereaved are the elderly, the pensioners, the holders of life insurance and bonds, those on fixed incomes, and those who believe that governments do not lie. But what's terribly tragic about it is that it's called an investment seminar, and they kept pointing out to us that there are no investors in this room because all the investors are bankrupt. You know, there is no investment anymore. It is all speculation. It is all a matter of following trends, getting in and out, knowing where to take your action. But that doesn't match up with our sort of traditional definition of what investing is, but they're just not around. And really the only time you ever hear investment mentioned is when you hear the TAB announcements over 6KG, you know, like where they're trying to respectabilise this government monopoly of gambling, you know. So the government's lying again. So that's investment is just not the thing to be doing right now. And one of the problems with our inflation rate in Australia is that it's twice, roughly at the moment, about twice of what our major trading partners' inflation rates are, which is creating a hell of a problem. You've got to hand it to this guy, President Reagan, because what's happened in Australia, America and England is that all the population of those three countries have gone through hell while they've been trying to squeeze inflation out of the system like you squeeze dirty water out of a sponge. I think we've all suffered about equally, but it has only worked in America, because their latest inflation results that have just been published is that it's currently running at 3.4%, which is a brilliant performance. So over the 6 months it'll probably be down around the 6%, and ours is running at 12%. The reason that they've been successful in America and they haven't been successful here and in England is because in America they have controlled government spending, but here they sure haven't. So that's point two. And I've got a couple of graphs on it, just making this up, that the government spending is going accelerating here. There's some pictures of the pass on. We've got a few spare. Keep two for our table. We'll give one to the other table's bright enough. I know Mr. Fraser blames Mr. Whitlam and everything, but you can see where the crossover point was down the bottom. It's the point is where the political colour changed, and it sure has increased since then. Now, what made me think about, when I thought about government spending, I was sitting on the back of somebody's Land Rover a while back, I thought of last year when Pat invited me to go along with her and meet John Howard in Perth, when he came over to Perth and explained how good the budget was. And anyway, somehow I managed to be standing up saying something. Pat, I thought if you invite me this year again, I've already written the speech. See? Can I practice on you? Right, here it says oh, I start off by saying, "Hello, Mr. Howard," because we're all in a room like this. "Hello, Mr. Howard. Someone told me that you're in charge of government spending. I didn't think anybody was in charge of government spending, and that's why it's out of control." Anyway, even if you might be the wrong guy, there is a bit of concern that it unless we get it under control, the failure, you know, the future looks pretty bleak for Australia. And what I'd like to ask you anyway is that your government obviously needs more help than it's getting in cutting expenditure and in turn reducing the deficit, and I'd like to ask if there's anything we can do to help. Like perhaps if we could pass some of these constitutional amendments to tax and spending limitations that are being passed in America, which are very effective. I'll break up from the speech here. It does seem strange to me that we vote on all sorts of things. We have referendums, we vote for people and candidates, but at no time does anyone in Australia get the opportunity of voting for how much we want the government to spend. Oh, isn't this a remarkable thing? You know, I think we should just tell them you can spend so much of the GNP or whatever. You know, give them a parameter to work within, and then leave that to them to work out how they're going to split it up between all the people that need the money, you know? Like, split it up the way they like it, but we don't give them a dollar figure to work on. It's like employing some guy and saying, well, you know, here's an open cheque, it's away you go. And that's not the politician's problem, it's our problem, the way we've got it set up. So these constitutional amendments in America are proving quite successful. There's another way we could help Mr. Fraser, and that's promote more tax avoidance schemes, because that imposes a discipline on them by limiting the amount that they can get their hands on. And the other way is for us as business people to stop getting all the perks and sort of stop saying, you know, like if we're involved in things which we have a direct connection with the government, we can say, well, look, we don't need your money, we'll manage without you. Like, and I was going to say, Mr. Howard, I got a mate called Ian Moffat in Kalgoorlie, and he probably agrees with Milton Friedman. And Milton Friedman was asked about what is the government's role with respect to tourism. And he said, Australia is a very fine country. It's got a lot of tourist attractions. I think the government ought to keep its hands off tourism. I don't think there's any justification in government expenditure to encourage tourism. If tourism is profitable, it will be in the private interest of various enterprises to encourage it and bring it here. And I'll be surprised if under those circumstances you didn't have a considerable growth in tourism, because it's a marvellous country and one that has lots to offer people all around the world, you know. So, and I think, you know, like fellas like Bob Muirhead and Ron Manners ought to say, listen, the government, we don't want your export development grants, we want to fly around the world on our own checkbook, you know. Like, I don't know, have you plugged into your export development grant? Bob, I'm ashamed of you, because here it is. Here's from one of Pat's outfits, the Australian Society of Accountants, promoting employment. Are you a part of this one, Pat? Oh, that's one. I want to be sure about that. There's a book that they've just published, and it's called Are You Getting Your Share of the $2,100 Million Available in Government Handouts? It's called the Government Handout Handbook. And there it is, and you can, and it tells you how to play all these lovely things. It's like lining us all up at pigs at the trough, you know. You just get your freaking paws. It's something for everybody in there. But, you know, so we do want the government to limit expenditure, but we're really encouraging them with everything we do. And I've got miles of examples here. You know, this one goes back to last year. State government just paid $1.65 million to take out of the debts involved in the greyhound racing complex at Cannington. You know, it should have gone to the liquidator, and the liquidator would have, you know, the greyhound complex would have still been there, but somebody more efficient would have been running it. But why the government comes and props up things like that? Here's the matrimonial agencies, today's paper or something. wanting the government to pass new legislation to protect them from competition. I don't know what that means. But there's just not so many of these things. This is in today's paper too. Performers seek $10 million fund boost. The federal government's being lobbied for a $10 million increase in funding for 45 performing arts companies. Why don't they sell tickets to the performances, you know, and raise the money like that? If people go to see them, that's good, they'll keep going. If people don't want to go and see them, why should the government prop them up? Here, the government eases control on bakers. That's wonderful. That's from today's paper too. Terrific. Well, what the hell is the government down there telling bakers when they can bake bread and when they can't bake bread for? It's a very, very expensive business. And here we are. This is the thing in the Farmers Weekly, National Farmer. It said the federal government must be just about keeping a British Rolls-Royce company in business on its own. According to the Minister for Administrative Service, the government owns no less than 11 Rolls-Royces, 2 silver Wraith Tourers. It goes on with the various specifications of the Rolls-Royces. Total vehicles in the federal fleet, this has nothing to do with state, the federal fleet is 5,021 cars. Total car buying budget this year is the biggest budget ever, $9.4 million, 7 times more than it was in the first year of the Fraser ministry. Thought the big bloke had promised to cut government spending. And finish it off by saying, there's a book on how to fix it. But, you know, these are problems, so if I can be assured that the government is going to come to grips, let's keep eating, come on, I'll have a go too. If we can be assured that the government is going to do something about controlling its spending, then I think we've got a great future. And these things are vital. There's another one. The next point is number 3. Australians are crippling our international competitiveness. Well, you all know about Metals X, the big white knight that have come in here to save North Cal. They've spent $20 million somehow or other so far, and they're trying to keep their nickel mine going so they can keep the North Cal going, but some local blokes won't let them take the nickel to the smelter. So there's a problem. I don't know who's working for who, but... And then there's something in the paper today, you know, you don't have to look far past the daily paper. Kuwait want live sheep or else. There must be some unions there somewhere, so that we won't let them have live sheep because we want our blokes in the abattoirs to get a job. We'll send them frozen meat instead. And there's the Kuwaiti guy, he said, we tell the government we don't want frozen meat. It's a well-known principle that you should satisfy your customers, and the Kuwaiti people want fresh meat. You know, well, that's reasonable. But it's easy to blame unions, but here are the farmers. The farmers are talking about... there's some comment here about if you're a farmer and you want to grow some milk, you've got to buy a quota from the government for $50 per litre of market milk access granted, and the price of your access quotas go onto the milk, so the consumers pay it, so nobody worries very much. So the farmers are just as bad as anyone else. But there was a comment up there saying that all things equal, that Australia looks like having a pretty good future, and it said if the country doesn't prosper, this is the way they put it very kindly, I thought, if it doesn't prosper, it will only be because of non-market factors. We talk about taxation, because that's point 4. I've subtitled that Malice in Plunderland. Funny thing about taxation is that the government has really got to increase tax on its present course, because it's not decreasing spending. It's either got to increase tax or enter into a massive inflationary phase or go bankrupt. So it's pointless talking about reducing tax unless they do all these other nice things. But if they don't reduce tax, it's going to be like that old saying, something or other, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Have you heard that saying? Like, it's a big sales bit, you see it at the conferences, but I think increased taxation works the other way around. When the going gets tough, the tough take a vacation. and go someplace else, because there are other places to go. Yeah? Plenty of, oh, too many examples of our tax. It makes me cry. I'll just point out two things. One is you see last month there's a record inflow of capital into Australia from overseas. I thought that was good, because I thought, well, that's good. There's some money coming in to invest in things and get things happening. But then I found out what the money was being borrowed for to bring into Australia. It's being borrowed by businessmen so they can pay their tax. That's where the major amount of the borrowings are going, so that businesses can pay their tax. That's crippling. And the other thing was a good quotation from one of the guys at the conference. He's an oil drilling exploration guy from USA. His comment was, in reality, there's no such thing as an income tax. There is only bad planning by those people who end up paying taxes. I didn't understand it, but I thought it was very good. There's one about Australia, a part of Asia. I think it's important. There's an investment and management consultant from California who's very keen to come to Australia and settle in West Australia, because he thinks that identifies very much with California. And since he's been back in the US, he's written me a great long letter here, you know, commenting on my suggestion that he does come to Perth and open up. And I'll just read a couple of comments he made. He said, his name's Leonard. He said, several blocks later, she came by again, this time headed in the opposite direction. I determined to detain her, even if it took a public body to... No. Then he met this Chinese businessman, that's right. He then asked me if I would like to meet his cousin, a wealthy Chinese lady in the importing business. I couldn't think of any good reason why not, so it was done again. Well, this lady was the most beautiful and intelligent woman from the Orient that I'd ever met. Naturally, we were together, and I'm sorry. Now, here we are. This is why Australia's part of Asia, you know. I'm trying to explain. So, here we are. How is Australia? I still give this matter much thought about moving to Australia, and do feel that your country offers some of the best living on earth. But one thing I learnt at the seminar did concern me. I had always envisioned Australia as a free country. The fact that your government feels it is entitled to place controls on your ability to move money in and out of the country bothers me tremendously. For free people should not be subjected to anyone being able to tell them when and where and in what amounts they can invest their money. That is a scary business indeed. That's the one little hang-up we had about Australia. We think it's quite normal to have regulations, but gee, there's not too many countries have regulations like that. Then maybe, that's got rid of five of the six. I'll have a potato when we talk about the price of gold. There's some good news about the price of gold and silver, mainly silver, because the Hunt family have sold some of their oil interests for $410 million in cash, so it means they don't have to sell all their silver holdings next month. And there's one thing certain about the price of gold, from listening to all these people up there, and that is that it will not remain the same, and it will not steadily increase at 2 or 3% per year, or whatever the price of oil increases, and all these formulas that people come up with. The only thing certain is that it will be a lot higher or a lot lower in the next few years. So that is absolutely a certainty. And on the stock market, there is only one thing certain there, that they will continue to fluctuate. And so far, putting all this together, I've come to the conclusion that we are now starting to see an increase in the price of gold and the commodities, and it will continue, and we could probably see gold at, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 like in the future. and that it will peak. The price of gold will peak violently. We thought the last peak was violent. You wait till you see the next one. It will peak violently on the 22nd of February. It will peak violently on the 22nd of February, 1986. So the message is to get out of absolutely everything around mid-1985. Get out of every single thing, your standard investments, your gold, currencies, all sorts of things. Basically, the scenario right now is that there's never been an opportunity like today to invest in assets at bargain prices. As long as you remember to get out mid-1985, because I say this because of President Reagan's seeming success against inflation at the moment, and the fact that he has a congressional election in November this year. This is going to tempt him to compromise a little on and reduce the budget deficit by doing two things. He'll reduce the defense budget on condition that the other part of their Congress reduces the welfare, or they call the Social Security budget. That will reduce the deficit amazingly and immediately have an effect on interest rates, which will come down. So he'll have interest rates down, he'll have inflation down, but in the long term, that's not quite the right thing to do. To really get inflation under control, he'd have to keep the pressure on like this for at least another couple of years, but he can't do that because he's got the political system that he owes allegiance to. So that when inflation reappears as a problem, next time it's going to be almost impossible. The cost of not completely curing it this time is going to be a very, very costly price to pay the next time. And that's why we're going to have a complete blowout, and that's where we're probably going to be at the point where it can't be controlled next time. It'll go right through the roof, and that's when we'll have this violent peak, perhaps, say, 1986. So between now and then, we've got lots of action in front of us, and that's just as I see it. But like everything I say, investments, a long-term type of security, getting into something that we've regarded as guiltage that we can hold on and just put away and forget about, that just doesn't happen anymore. It's to the stage where we've got to monitor things on a daily basis, because things are going to change, and that is the only thing that is certain. The change will be absolutely with us for the next few years, and it's going to be a very, very vital 3 or 4 years for Australia and the world.